everything that's been bad has actually been something for the good. And I honestly like feel that, like, there's just nothing like, if I've hired the wrong person, I've learned the next time how to hire not the wrong person. And if I have made an error with how we've dealt with a customer, then we've learned to put that into practice, that we don't do that with customers, or we change our language or our script with customers. So I really wouldn't change a thing.
Do you love your business? You should, right? Well, sometimes we just don't. It's my hope that this, the My Daily Business Coach podcast, helps you regain a little of that lost love by providing tips and tactics, tools, insights, inspiration, all the good stuff to help you actually enjoy running your business. In addition to actionable tips and tactics that you'll be able to execute immediately, you'll also hear from creative small business owners around the world who've been able to sidestep the hustle and build a business that merges their passion with their purpose and provides a profit. I'm your host, Fiona Kalacki, founder of My Daily Business Coach. Let's get going. Hello, and welcome to episode 84 of the My Daily Business Coach podcast. Today, you are in for a treat in more ways than one, but you are definitely in for so many business tips and tools and insights. Today, it is a small business interview type episode here on the podcast, and my guest is just so giving and generous with her business journey, what's worked, what didn't work, the tactics that she uses to keep herself enthusiastic about what she does and to build her team and keep them feeling great about things, but also about small things that she's developed that actually go a long, long way to building brand loyalty and customer retention. So who is my incredible guest? Well, it's Natalie Paul, the founder behind the much-loved cake shop in North Melbourne, Beatrix Bakes, and also the person behind the incredible book, Beatrix Bakes, which came out around about a year ago now, and it just has done so well, not just here in Australia, but also internationally, which is massive. Now, as Natalie discusses in the podcast, she always knew that this was what she was going to do. She just absolutely loved baking. She loved creating things for people, and she spent her life really cultivating her craft. She studied and she worked under people like Maggie Beer and Stephanie Alexander, and Beatrix Bakes is actually her third business. And in this podcast, we talk about what did she want to create and what sort of lessons had she learned from owning two previous businesses that she took into Beatrix Bakes. What I love most about Natalie is how down to earth and genuine she is. I mean, she has, 75,000 followers on Instagram. Her book has just been printed multiple times. I remember trying to order it early on and they'd already gone into reprint, I don't know, before maybe it was even in stores. People just loved it that much. But behind all of this, beautiful looking cakes and beautiful images on Instagram and amazing cookbook, is a real person who has struggled through the same self-doubt as so many other small business owners and has created different ways to deal with not understanding a particular element of business. And I love how much ownership Natalie takes over all parts of her business and her understanding of, well, I might not feel like I'm good at it right now, but I know that if I take the time to invest in my education and up-leveling, I can become good at it and I can own that part of my business. The other thing that is so obvious about Natalie's work, whether in the cake shop or in her businesses before, or even, her study or the book itself, is how much hard work she has put in. And I mean, I'm very anti hustle, 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 but she's really real about, when I was writing my book, I didn't have all the time in the world to sit and write a book. So she would take moments that she could in the kitchen of the cake shop and sit wherever she could find a spot and write. And she talks about having to, get up because people needed to reach to get something behind her, but she kept doing it and she kept grabbing the moments where she could to do the work that she wanted to in order to reach the goal of creating a cookbook. And obviously it's done incredibly well for her. And lastly, one other thing that just really, really stood out in this was the boundary setting that Natalie has had to do to fulfill her own goals of what she wants to create in her business. And I think so often in business, we can listen to other people or we can hear people say, well, you're not going to survive as a business if you don't offer this, this, and this. And I think what's come across in Natalie's interview today is just how much she stood her ground and was like, this is what I want to create. This is what I'm going to say no to. This is what I will do. This is what I won't do. And I know and believe that there is an audience for that. So definitely enough from me. Get your notepads ready if you can do that, if not driving. Make sure that you're ready for all of the tips and insights that Natalie shares. Here it is, my interview with Natalie Paul, founder of Beatrix Bakes. All right. I'm super excited about today's interview. Welcome, Nat. How are you feeling right now?
Thanks for having me on. I am feeling really like we're coming out of this, well, for me and the business that we're coming out of this, I'm not sure whether it's like a chrysalis after COVID and that some of the things that have changed and we've gotten better at during the last like 12 months have actually turned us into like beautiful business butterflies. Or sometimes I feel like it might be a bit of a hangover because we are still holding on to a bit of that sort of austerity and that organizational trauma, I think, from last year of trying to pivot the business so many times throughout the year. So I'm not sure where it sits quite yet, but I do think it's a little bit of both of those things.
Yeah, and I get the sense from lots of my clients as well, particularly where they're similar to you in that they are very customer-facing, where they're sort of the same thing, like, oh, okay, some exciting things developed last year that we could be going with, but we then take away this part of the business or we then have these costs involved or we're going to be exhausted because now we're working these extra hours.
Yep.
But then you've sort of got that tug of war of like, but what if we go back into lockdown? Well, we kind of need to keep that thing happening.
Yeah, that's right.
So we are recording this in 2021 and I believe that you've just hit 10 years in business. Exciting. It's such a massive milestone.
Thank you so much. I'm so proud of it. Really, honestly, it is quite surreal for me. It's the longest job I've ever had. And it does feel like the first day and today that not 10 years was between those two times. It feels like it's only like a few years. And when I actually allow myself, I'm not a very good at celebrating or going back through the Rolodex of achievements, if you will, and thinking, well, that was really great that we did that. It just does feel like it was just like one foot in front of the other and now we're kind of here. And one of our celebrations that we did do was to do a little Instagram competition and asking people just to tell us their favorite Beatrix stories. And it was almost like I've sort of screenshotted them all and kept them all for posterity when I'm old and want to look back at my achievements. And I love what they said. I love what the business meant to them and how Beatrix had been woven into the tapestry of their lives, which was one of the most beautiful things that was said about the business, which certainly I didn't expect, that would ever happen, that a business I created would mean that much to people and so beautiful that it has.
Oh, I love that.
I know.
Really excited to dive into that a bit further with you because I feel, you know, your business has impacted a beautiful time of my life as well. Did you celebrate though? Did you like go out for dinner or?
I think we had some cheers at work but I didn't go out for dinner on that weekend. I'm very much that's great. What's the next thing on the agenda that we have to tackle or do? So, yeah, I am a terrible celebrator, which I should be better at that, especially for my team, but I am trying.
And it's funny that you're a terrible celebrator when a lot of your business would come from other people
celebrating. Yeah, it does. But I did have more of an existential crisis around the 10-year mark. There was a little bit of a sense of like, is it right to keep going? Is it like, is this what I want to do for the next 10 years? And so it was kind of a little bit bittersweet, I guess. I was just sort of like digging into some feelings about just, I think, feeling a little bit tired from last year as well, just being sort of tilting my thoughts to like, you know, do I want to do another 10 years? But I definitely do.
Oh, that's great. I feel like I had a coffee with some friends who run businesses and they, about a month or maybe like in early February, mid-February, we were all saying the same thing, like, oh, there's just was just this flatness. Like, I feel like it was just almost like, you know, when you're rushing through, say before a wedding or before something big, you're like, you've just got so much to do. And then you get to the end and then you kind of, it's a bit flat. Like there's a bit of an anticlimax.
It's totally like that. Yeah. That's funny that it was about the same time that I had that crisis of, going forward. Yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, no, I literally remember sitting there in February being like, do I want to do this business for like, because I've been, I did the same thing. I was like, do I want to do this for another 6 years and how old will I be then and all this stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, because it's really like next phase of life, especially for me at my age. I'm thinking, is this going to be, am I going to be able to do it? But I am. I've got good, strong knees and hips, so I think I can do it.
Oh, good, good. I feel the same as well. I came back to it with passion. So a lot of people listening have your book and know your delicious cake shop. Do you call it a bakery, a cake shop, pastry shop? What do you call it?
I think I call it a cake shop now, especially that we are takeaway only. We probably would have called ourselves a cafe pre-COVID. Yeah, so I think cake shop is the best, most apt description for it.
Okay, so a lot of people will know your cake shop, even if they're not in Melbourne, where you're based and where I'm based as well. But can you talk us through what Beatrix Bakes is and kind of all the different elements? And also, I'd love to kind of understand how you came up with that name. Who is that, like your middle name or something else?
Well, I was going to register my business name. So I was ready with my form in hand and my credit card to pay. This was in 2010. And I was about to hand it over and I just thought, no, I don't feel right about that name. So I left the line, left the queue.
Oh, wow.
And went home and had a little glass of wine and did some brainstorming. And Beatrix found its way to me. And I think it was because I knew I was going to hang those old-fashioned beaters in the shop. And I thought that Tricks with the Beater was kind of funny.
Ooh.
But the one thing that sort of stood out to me was there's this story that I love about Natasha Stott Despoja when she was a senator. And she used to be greeted by Gough Whitlam. He used to say, good morning, Senatrix, and use the old-fashioned version of the female suffix, like an aviatrix.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, that was really nice. I'm a female beta, so I'm going to call myself, like, Beatrix. And it just stuck. It just, like, found its way. That little story and the little wordplay was just enough. And then I was, like, straight back in the next day after I'd finished my wine. And just registering Beatrix Bakes. I had to have Beatrix Bakes as the name. I also like it too because Beatrix is such a great name. It's Beatrix Potter that I grew up with, Beatrix Kiddo from the Kill Bill films, Uma Thurman's such a badass in those films. And it just really made a lot of sense to me. And I do like having a business with a name attached to it. There's like a feeling that there's something real behind it.
Yes.
Like a real person and people. And yeah, so then Beatrix just stuck and it was just perfect.
Yeah. And I love that it's sort of old school, like vintagey, and, you know, kind of goes with making cakes from scratch and all of that stuff as well.
It does. Yeah. But we don't fall too hard into it being really like kitschy and 50s and things like that. So yeah, it's a nice, strong name.
Yeah, it definitely is. So what does Beatrix Bakes do? If someone's listening to this, say, in the US or somewhere else, and they don't follow you on Instagram, what are the kind of elements? So you do takeaway cakes?
So we do takeaway cakes. So we sell slices of cakes and individual bakes, so donuts and caramel slice and things like that, as well as slices of whole cake, which is probably the majority of what we do. We sell around 150,000 slices of cake a year, or units of cake a year. That was just last year, which, just to put it into perspective, this tiny shop in North Melbourne, that's, when you draw back the curtain, like, that's how busy we are making so much cake, slices of cake. It really does blow my mind.
And that's last year.
That was last year. Yeah. We were shut for part of it, not for much. We were like open during the lockdowns, very limited, in a limited way. Yeah. So it's a huge amount when I look at those numbers and see it in that perspective. Mm-hmm. They're all made from scratch, from like real butter, real eggs, flour, sugar, nothing artificial except for the red food colouring in the red velvet. We also make whole cakes for celebrations. I think we do around 100 of those a week. We also make savory things. So we make sandwiches in the summer and pies and sausage rolls in the winter. We make the bread for those sandwiches now, which we just started this year, which was a really one thing I'd always wanted to do, is to actually complete the whole picture of making everything ourselves from scratch. We do coffee in a limited way. We don't do single-use takeaway cups anymore. We stopped that in 2019.
Amazing.
And so it's just people bring their keep cups or they just drink one out on the sidewalk. And that's what we do in a, yeah, that's what Beatrix does every week.
Amazing. And do some of your cakes go to, like, do you do kind of weddings or corporate events and stuff as well? I guess that's the whole cake business, isn't it?
Yeah, we do a little bit. We did dabble in doing larger cakes and we did think about wedding cake business. It's something that makes me really nervous. I've done it in the past, and that whole terror of having like a tiered cake in the back of a van,
mm-hmm.
traveling around just does make me quite anxious. So people do come to us, and one of my favorite weddings I did for Matt and Sarah years ago was we did like a whole dessert table for them for their wedding. So they had like a blueberry and lemon curd shag, and they had meringues, and they had like this, it was almost like a tiny Beatrix cake house at their wedding because they were such great customers. And people like to do things like that, and then everyone gets a slice of something that they like.
Oh, yum. I'm like salivating.
Yeah. Yeah,
I feel when I look at your Instagram, and through COVID, I kept just saying to my husband, when we're in the 5 kilometer, because we are definitely 25 kilometers from you.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, we can never go there. When are we going out there? Come on. But I did a bit of research on you as well. And if I'm correct, Beatrix Bakes is not the first company that you started. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
That is very true.
So you had an earlier one, and I'd love you to kind of describe how they differ, and then I guess what you wanted to do with Beatrix that perhaps you hadn't done earlier or you hadn't been able to do earlier, or even kind of which lessons that you took from the first experience into your business now when setting it up.
Yeah. So I actually had two businesses before Beatrix. So the first one ended, it was wholesale cakes. It was my first time in business. It ended really acrimoniously with business partners that we had at the time, and I lost a lot of money, and it made me realize that my business toolbox was kind of pretty empty. I didn't have any skills in really negotiating or managing what I was doing. I said yes to nearly everything that I was asked to do, which put me into a really tired place. And then that business ended. And from the ashes of that business, I met Cassandra Godden, who became my business partner, and we created Little Bertha, which was along the same lines, but without saying yes to everything. So I learned that. And we managed to grow this like really beautiful little wholesale business of just making cakes and taking them around to cafes. And it was really great. We did really well. And then we sold that as a going concern in 2008, I think it was, because I was really burnt out. But Cass was really great. She did all the numbers for us in the business, and she is also the smartest person in the room, in nearly every room that she's in. And she taught me how to, she just gave me some like fundamentals of business and life that I didn't have. So it was really, really great. So when it came to Beatrix, so I had 2 years off where I just did admin at a university because I was super tired and super burnt out with the entire business, and I sort of hadn't found that niche that I was looking for. So when I started building the plan for Beatrix, because I think it was inevitable that I would go back to it, inevitable that this was my, I hate using the word destiny, but let's put that in there.
Yeah.
I really wanted to have that retail experience, and I'd always felt I was terrible with people, but doing the admin at a university, I realized I actually had some okay skills with liaising with people. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see people enjoying what we were making. I didn't really want to just like drive it around and have someone else look after my product. I wanted to look after my product.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why we don't do any wholesale here, we did a little bit with Market Lane a few years ago, but I really just wanted to keep our product for us and for people to come and buy it from us. And so that was one of the things I learned. I also learned that you need to have a pretty strong fence of boundaries for what you're doing, so you don't have to make everything for everyone. And one of the greatest things I learned is that you build a fence of no And then within that fence of no, you can say yes to anything you want. So as long as you're not jumping out of that fence, when we were a cafe, we never did breakfast stuff. Mm-hmm. We just did our sandwiches and we did our cakes. And that's really hard for some people to understand, but it was the business model that made sense for us and was streamlined for the space. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like I needed to do everything and make macarons or make croissants, which I'm terrible at, or make eclairs, which I'm terrible at. I just wanted to do the things I really wanted to make. The other thing that Cass taught me and that I really wanted to do with Beatrix was to learn my numbers. So I really wanted to be the one doing the payroll and doing my BAS and reconciling all my accounts and making all the dollars and cents match to the absolute cent. Mm-hmm. Because I'd always been scared of it or evasive with it, and I didn't want that to happen anymore. So I made those, commitments. They were the three big commitments for Beatrix.
Oh, I love that. There's so much goal. We could just finish the podcast now and that would be enough for people to take away. I was nodding, being like, yes, like so. I feel like often when I would talk to people and the first thing we talk about is values and money, because I'm like, if you're are off, if you're, you know, like if you're saying yes to things you don't really want to say yes to, or if you're saying yes to things that don't align with, you know, who you are or whatever, and then if you're not making the money that you need to make for your, you know, individual needs, then it's just going to all go up. And the amount of times people have come and said, oh, you know, I'm spending crazy amounts of money on a logo or crazy amounts of money on a beautiful website, and I'm like, that's all good, but do we know the stuff at the bottom? Because that's going to be the foundation. So I think fantastic that you had that. And also I love the idea of the no fence.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times people are scared, like, you know, if they were in your situation and they think, well, I'm in inner city, I'm in North Melbourne, lots of people are expecting with their coffee to be able to get eggs and bacon or eggs and avocado. How did you kind of stay strong to that? How did you just believe, no, I know that enough people are going to want what I have. You know, we don't have to make smashed egg, smashed avocado.
Yeah, I think because it felt like that, you know, the last roll of the dice for me. So I thought if I couldn't, I mean, I wasn't stubborn. Like I want people to enjoy what we make, but I don't know if I knew or if I can sit here now and say I think I knew, but I just knew if it wasn't on these terms that I had, this business model that I knew was healthy for me as well, that it wasn't going to be worth it. It wasn't going to be worth it like the other, like the first business wasn't worth it. So I think just something innate inside me was just telling me to hold fast to it and just, stick with it.
I love that. I love that. Just that lesson alone. Just learn how to say no and set your boundary. Massive.
Yeah. And hold on, you know, and just hold on.
I love that. So you have been in this kind of world for a long time, and I know that you've worked with incredible people like Maggie Beers and other people, but you started baking at 7 years old. Is that right?
I was hit by the thunderbolt of baking at 7 years old. So I was always baking at home, and I started cooking professionally at 18. But in that time between 7 and 18, I cooked a lot. I baked a lot at home. It was really all I ever wanted to do, apart from a small moment where I thought I might have been a food technologist. I think getting hold of like those early like Gourmet Travelers and Vogue Entertaining and seeing what chefs did, and that sort of like opening up the doors to what happened in kitchens and things that just really appealed to me. And so it was just the goal. It was always, I knew I'd always cook. I'd probably always cook sweet stuff because I liked it so much. Mm-hmm. And when I wasn't doing it, I was baking just so much. So a couple of times when I've just done more savory cooking, so cooking in restaurants and cooking like an entree section or main course section, when I went home, I'd be making like tiered cheesecake layer cakes and three strudels or something like that, and just really going wild. I think I'm just, a sweet seeking missile.
I wish I grew up in your house, although I must say my mum was like the champion baker. I love baking because my mum was just such a great. So did your parents bake a lot? Who was inspiring you at seven?
I just got a book from the library, and it was How to Make a Butter Cake, and I was so excited by it, and I was trying to get everyone around me to be excited about it, but no one really was. At the age of seven, they weren't really getting on board. Dad made a great Christmas cake every year, and it was a really big thing when he made it. It was like many days of preparation, many steps of the baking. It was like this beautiful ritual that happened every year. So that probably coloured my passion, or just like engage my passion. Mum was a reluctant cook and she was really good at burning chops. So it wasn't definitely not from her.
Yep.
And so it just kind of was always there. It was just I knew that that was what I wanted to do, and I didn't really look at doing anything else in my life. Yeah.
So what, like, I don't know if there is an answer to this, but I guess when you like employ people or have people contact you, I'm sure a lot of people contact you to work with you, how do people realize this is actually something I could do versus I just like I love baking. If I could bake, if I could just bake 24/7, I would. However, I'm trying to be healthier. So it's like, yeah, I'd have a really sweet tooth. So what I bake is usually just full of butter and creams and chocolate. Yeah.
Yes.
But I would love to do it, but I don't know if I've got the I wouldn't have the stamina to like do it full time like you. So, and I probably wouldn't be anywhere near as good. But how do people understand, oh, this is just a passion or a hobby versus like, how do you look at people and assess they're really into it, they could do this? Because a lot of hard work involves. The pretty cake at the end is just the very end.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work. I think you don't know you can do it until you do it, which it was probably only until I started a business that I thought I could do it on my own as a it's tough because maybe it's before that. Maybe it's when you like to start cooking and you are on your feet all day and you understand that it takes, yeah, a bit of grit to work physically all day for your entire shift, and that it's a lot of cleaning as well. There's a lot of like, you know, for every bowl you put something delicious into, that bowl has to be cleaned.
People don't think about that.
And put away, yeah. And so you have to want to do it. You have to want to do it, and you have to want to do it even when it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. So another way that people would have known about you, and I've mentioned it before, is your amazing book, which is called Beatrix Bakes, and that came out last year, which was another huge thing because I think it it went into like reprint. I remember contacting, I think it was you guys, or and it was like, it's in reprint. And I was like, whoa, it just came out and it's already in reprint. And so such an incredible book. And I have a copy. I've tried the caramel slice with the salt.
Yes.
It's amazing. Yes. Amazing. And again, we'd love to just cook that every night, but I just don't have the metabolism for it.
You do need some broccoli every now and again.
Yes, some other stuff. But from a business perspective, did you do the book because you were coming up to 10 years, or why did you decide to do the book now? And also, I'd love to know what impact that book has had on the business. Has it kind of been the same? Has it had much more awareness? And then also, did you launch or do anything? Because you would have done that, I think it was like March 2020. So it was just.
Yeah, just before. Yep. Just on the cusp. Yep.
Yeah. So I know there's a lot of questions in there, but I guess, yeah, why did you decide to do it and what impact has it had?
Well, I'd always been really scared too, because I know other people that have done cookbooks and they've all said how much hard work it is to write a book. And I had a business that was really hard work to run. So I really feel like there was ever a moment that I could see myself having time outside of that. And then in 2016, I had a position vacant and this woman, Charlotte Vermeesch, joined the team. I kept getting her confused with someone else, so I didn't really want to get her in for a trial. I thought she was like a, I just had her confused, but then she just sort of bulldozed her way in. And I realized I'd been mistaken, and she started doing coffee and doing front of house. And then she was really instrumental in being this, again, a bulldozer of positivity around me and just saying, so when Heidi Grant rang and they said, oh, would you like to do a book? I was like, should I do it? She's like, yes, you should do it. You should just do it and I'll help you and we'll just get it done. And she was just incredible. And I think that's why it was just time to do it. I also feel like that are in there were at their most perfect ripeness, if you will. I think before that they hadn't quite been as good. Like cooking and baking is like constantly tinkering a little bit, just adding a little bit more of this or less of that, or adjusting temperatures. And I think it was just the time to like pick the ripe fruit of the recipes and put them into something and capture that moment and the achievements of what the little shop had done. So Charlotte was just there every step of the way, just testing recipes, reading stuff, giving feedback, and just really just pushing me along to do the project. And I'm really glad I did. And it was really born out of being a gift to the people, like our community of Beatrixes that had been asking for so long for a cookbook. And so I kind of just did it for them and wanted to give them something to have in their home so that they could always have a bit of Beatrix with them. And I think that I was just ready to do the work, and I was ready to just take on. I mean, also Charlotte was incredible in what she shoulders in terms of work and her energy. And so I felt like she could take care of things for me while I, you know, I used to sit on this little IKEA bench on wheels in the prep room, our tiny prep room, and just sit there and tap away at the computer when I just had like a bit of a spark of inspiration to write something. So I just like jumped into the prep room, and I'd have to like shuffle every 5 minutes to so someone could get something out of the fridge or put something away. And she was just there protecting me and just letting me write it, and it was very great.
Oh, it's so lovely. And do you feel like it's brought new customers? Like, obviously you created it for the people that had kind of helped you build your business. I mean, it's hard to know with COVID and travel restrictions and stuff, but
yeah, it is hard to know, because I only did like a handful of engagements before we couldn't do anything more with the launch. So I don't know if I popped up on anyone's visibility then. So I don't know. I just think it's enriched for people that love Beatrix. It's kind of enriched their experience. But it has travelled over to the US and the UK, and I have really, really lovely relationships now on Instagram and DMs with bakers in LA, Nicole Rucker. She's incredible. And I've always admired her work, and we've just connected through the book as well, which I don't think would have happened.
Yep.
And our great baker, Daisy, at I think it's Breadboard Bakery in Massachusetts, and just having like those nice little relationships. But I don't know if I have a metric on whether anything really, it really like amplified our customer base or anything like that.
Yeah. And it's hard as well. I'm with Hardy Grant, and obviously they're the booksellers. So like often people will say to me, oh, I'm doing a workshop for people with branding. Can I buy 20 copies? And I'm like, I don't sell them. Sorry.
Yeah.
I wish I did, but I don't. And obviously, you know,
yeah,
of course Hardy Grant would let us sell them if we wanted to, but it's just, yeah, choosing what you're trying to do. And I feel the same. Like, I feel like some people have, it's the first way that the kind of first touch point that they've had of me. But then for other people, it's like, oh my gosh, now you have a book.
Yes. Yeah. I know some people have bought it because it gives them all the storage information they need for when they buy cakes from us, but they don't bake from it at all. It's like a it's like a guide to how to store cakes. It's quite cute.
It's such a good gift book as well. Like, I mean, cookbooks in general are good, but I feel like this is particularly good, because sometimes with, say, like cookbooks where they've got dinners and fancy salads and stuff,
yeah,
they don't make everything. Like, I always just flip to the dessert part.
Yeah.
So to have like a cookbook that's just, you know, desserts and some savory things as well. But yeah, for sure. Love it. So I reached out to you and did a, and the reason I'm mentioning this as well is because I think sometimes people don't do this, and they should, because it just builds.
Mm.
But I reached out to you on Instagram and randomly told you, oh, you know, my dad had a funeral and your cakes were at our funeral. We'd had firecracker event, the lovely Cassie Cater.
Amazing.
And I remember just like sending it out and then thinking, oh, is that like a real downer? Like, is she going to read it? Like, I don't really need to hear about funerals. But your response was just so warm and gracious. And you were talking about being so appreciative of like milestones that your business gets to be involved in a way. And it really was like a heartfelt thing, because I think, I mean, not to put it down, but at funerals, people, it's a very awkward situation for people to come up to the children of somebody and, you know, you don't know them and they're trying to talk to you about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yep. I remember just so many of Dad's older, you know, friends from bowls and stuff were like, this cake is delicious. And it was a starting point to then open up conversation.
Yeah.
It was more deep and stuff. But I'd love you to talk about, like you touched on it before, how your business does impact people. Because I think sometimes with clients, when I talk about their why, or we talk about how are people's lives improved with your product or your services, they can think, well, I only sell donuts, or I sell shoes, or, you know, it's not like I'm selling, you know, mental health products or something. So I'd love you to talk about your experience with knowing that your product has an impact on people's lives.
I think that for me, from where I, and I haven't been done business courses or anything like that, but I know that every time you sell something or you buy something, let's go back to selling. Every time you sell something, you're selling more than your product. To have something meaningful in the world, you're also selling a feeling alongside that. So the cake that someone picks up to cheer up a friend or to give to someone in lockdown has a value to it. It has this like deep, this is really hard because it's like really the emotional stuff of what we do.
What?
And it is real. Like I've seen angry people eat cake and their mood change, and maybe that's just the sugar, but I tend not to believe that that's true. I think it's more than that.
Yeah.
I've seen people during lockdown when they're like sad and angry and lonely use cake as something good that brightens up their day, their sweet spot. And I think from the response from that Instagram competition where people were talking about their favorite memories, and again, I don't want to apologize for bringing sadness into the equation of a conversation, but it's really important that we talk about it, because the most profound responses from people were people that had lost. So we're near a lot of hospitals here in North Melbourne, so people were getting like some pretty serious treatments at like Peter Mac for cancer or Royal Children's Hospital for their kids. So they'd circle around to Beatrix as their like treat after their treatment. And it gives me such chills that just balances out their day somewhat. It just does a small thing. So whether you're making a really beautiful handbag or a piece of furniture, if you do it with feeling, if you're like, you know, our goal is to make people just feel good when they part with money, in essence, so that they are happy that they've done that. And we also like to like include these like random extraordinary moments, I like to call them, a little bit of REM. So if you can see someone's having a bad day, just like putting a little something extra in their box, or if they're celebrating something, just doing like little moments like that to try and just connect with your community, the people, the customers that mean so much to the business. So I really feel like, you know, I wouldn't like to have a business where I just feel like I'm just selling a cake to put money in the bank or to hit some sort of target goal that it has to, you know, the piece of the cake. And we fail on it sometimes. Like sometimes when I'm on the floor and I feel a bit stressed, I do lose sight of that goal. But for the principle for the business is definitely that, is to sell something that makes someone feel good.
Yeah. And I love, what did you call them? Moments of?
Oh, random extraordinary moments.
Random extraordinary moments. I love that. A bit of
RM. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, and it can be anything. Like I often talk to people, especially in my marketing workshops, and people come in with this idea that marketing is just like a sales page or, you know, a tag or something. And I'll be like, no, it's the whole experience. That's what marketing is, customer service. And even where we get our car serviced, you know, whenever you go get a car service, it's not a fun thing because you know that you're going to be up for this certain amount of money. And you're always worried that, oh, they're gonna say that something's wrong that's not really wrong. It's funny. Yeah. And we have the most incredible woman who does the reception there. And I actually said to her, you have incredible customer service. Like she's just so friendly. Every time you talk to her, she's just like, nothing's a problem, can get it done for you. Like amazing. So it doesn't need to be, you know, you're like in cakes or anything where there is a clear emotional connection. It could be anywhere.
Yeah, I had a woman serve me at Woolworths the other day and she was so fun and so funny. And she was the last person I was going to see in the day before I went home. And she just gave me such a high, just being such a great, all-round great human that it was just so great. It was like, you're awesome. So then I wrote Woolworths a letter saying, you know, you should promote her because she's really good.
I often, like, if I'm in Kmart and I'll be like, what's your name? And they'll say, you know, Lauren or something. And I'm like, I'm going to call Kmart Eastland and tell them how great Lauren is.
Yeah. Cake lives in joyful places, but it also lives in those darker, more complex places. And I think you're right. I think that at funerals, some of the cake I remember most profoundly from my childhood from eating that was at funerals. And it absolutely has that connection of drawing people together, that they can talk about something and and have a shared, you know, beautiful, sweet experience.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. So thank you again. So part of it was also just talking about how good your cakes look, because your cakes do look amazing and they taste amazing. Are you the person who always just like nails every birthday cake? And then just like, do your friends and family, does anyone else in your circle make cakes, or is it always expected that Nat will bring the cake to any kind of barbecue or event or anything like that?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes I am, again, my boundary, and I say, well, I can't bring a cake, or I don't really feel like making another cake. I assume if, you know, if someone's an accountant, they don't feel like doing someone's taxes at the end of a barbecue. I like to use that analogy. So, but I do like to rip out, you know, a stellar cake for certain functions and just try and dazzle people. But I think all my friends might be a little bit tired of my cakes and looking for something new.
Do they ever feel like you're going to judge them? And like, are they like, I brought the cake, Nat, like don't look too closely? Or
they say it, but I never do. So the only cake I ever judge is zucchini cake, because I can't stand it. And yeah, I mean, I love carrot cake. I think carrot's a great vegetable. You know, carrot can party with the cakes, but I just, yeah, zucchini, I'm not down with that yet. But I never judge a cake. And even like packet cakes, they speak to the cakes I used to have when I was a kid as well. So that, like, they've got that little bit of nostalgia in them. So I really do love all cakes. And I can be, this is going to be the first place I can tell you that I am quite partial to a caramel mud cake from any large supermarket bakery section.
So, heard it here first.
Yeah. I still make my husband go and get it so that I am not spied picking one up from our local supermarket where some of our customers shop, but I do.
Oh, that is so there you go. Funny. Oh my gosh, sneaky. We heard it here. Oh, that is
yeah.
Actually, I was listening to somebody the other day who's really, really senior in the design space. And then she was saying to me, oh yeah, these are just from IKEA. And these, and I was like, oh yeah. I was like, oh, but she's like, yeah, you know. So talking about like zucchini that you don't, you know, that must not be on any cake, and carrot. How do you come up with the flavors for your cakes? Because they are incredible. And often, even just stuff that I've seen on Instagram, I'm like, oh, a donut out of that? Whoa. Do you just spend a lot of time experimenting? Did you, in your schooling and understand, like working with other people, did you just understand, oh, these two flavors you would never think to put together really work well? Or how do you kind of come up with them?
I think it's just being interested in cooking in general. So whether that was when I was cooking in, like, doing hospitality and working in restaurants, I used to see a lot of ingredients, interesting ingredients. So there is like a Middle Eastern tilt, because I spent a few years working in a Middle Eastern restaurant, to some of the things that we do. I eat out. I get inspired by eating out. I get inspired by reading cookbooks. I also get very inspired by running out of ingredients at the last minute and having to think of something to put in there. Oh. And so, you know, we might be doing, I think the carrot cake's one of the best examples of it, because we, in the early days, we were always making that with walnuts, which is a classic carrot cake nut combo. And then one day the baker that was making them had run out of walnuts, and I said, let's try hazelnuts. And I think that it's a much better combination. I think carrots and hazelnuts are really great together. So it's little things like that. I just like those little inspirations just come from anywhere, you know, just watching TV shows or seeing something put together. And sometimes I can just be like looking at two ingredients in the fridge next to each other and go, oh, I wonder what they'd be like together, and then just have a go at it. So it's all those like, yeah, little moments, I guess.
I love that. My mum was very much random things together. Like,
yeah.
When she passed away, my sister and I were like, oh, she never gave her recipes. And I tried to get her to write her recipes down, but she would always just be like, I don't know. I just put it until I feel like enough. You know? Like, it was very intuitive. And sometimes the salads she would come up with, I'd be like, Mum, this has like cashews and oranges and bits of feta and like olives. What's going on here? But it always kind of tasted nice at the end. But I think she was like, whatever's in the fridge is going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so one thing that obviously is very clear about your business and lots of businesses like that is just how beautiful things look. And I know that you started your business before social media took off, because Facebook was, I think it was 2007, but Instagram was 2012. And even then people weren't using it till like 2015 and stuff. But how has social media played a role in your business? Because obviously people want food that looks good and looks good on Instagram and other visual platforms. how's it played a role in your business? Are you very clear on what you're putting on Instagram? Do you have like a strategy behind it? Do you just sort of do the same sort of things and you know that they work? And has it, do you think social media has played a huge role in your business or not as much as people might expect?
I think it has. And I think for reasons which people really don't use Instagram for. So probably the biggest priority that we have for Instagram, and it is, so Charlotte, that incredible employer that I didn't want to hire all those years ago, she does the Instagram for me now.
Oh,
she's incredibly good at it. And I've only just handed that over in the last, say, 8 months that she started doing it. And our principle for it all is to be informative. So what we like to say is we made this today, but we never use hyperbole. So we never say, this is the greatest carrot cake you'll ever eat. Come on down for a slice. Because I think that with Instagram, there's so much aspirational bombarding that they really don't need me to do that as well. Sometimes when we do like a seasonal special, like the Black Forest cake, we just set a boundary with it. So we just say, we're only have this for a couple of weeks while the fresh sour cherries are in. So pop on down if you want to grab a slice. We just want to take a nice pic of some nice food that hasn't been overstyled. It's just pretty much a slice of cake that we pull out of a cake in the morning. And we don't take it too seriously, and we don't try and engage that sort of sense of FOMO, because you won't miss out if you miss out on a piece of red velvet. I promise you, your life will be so beautiful that day as it is. That is really what drives us, just to be informative about what we have, what our opening hours are. And this really is the best question, but Instagram and social media has changed how we approach food. And I think that people now have their expectations are really heightened because of it.
Yeah.
And that can be really hard for businesses to respond to when the slice of maybe the cake that they bought and have traveled an hour with on the train doesn't look like what was on our Instagram, which is obviously normal that there'd be some difference. I remember some of the first pictures I took, someone commented, can you please stop using yellow filters on your pictures because I can't see what the food looks like in real life. So it was great. Which is really funny. So, you know, we have gotten better at it. And we used to do a little bit of hashtagging between like 2015 and 2016, but we really didn't chase followers or anything like that. We've just let it grow organically and let it lift and just been communicative. I mean, we even use Instagram to tell people that they've left cakes behind, like, or a sandwich. So sometimes we'll just put a call out like, hey, Brittany, you've gotten your sandwich. Can you please come back? And that's really what it's been, just a real, this is what we do.
Oh, I love that. And I love just the kind of gentleness of it as well, not being like,
yes,
you've got to come, it's the best thing ever.
Because you're not missing out, and you're not missing out if you're sitting home with like a beautiful piece of banana bread that you've made. That's great too.
Yeah. Or the caramel cake that now.
Caramel. Oh, you got a caramel mud cake. Lucky you. That's great. I'm jealous.
So do you have, obviously social media has played a part, but do you have, Nick, you've talked about a couple of people, Charlotte and Cassandra, I'm sure there's other people as well, but have you had any kind of business mentors or courses or books or even tech tools or different platforms that have really helped you build your business?
Yeah, Cassandra is my number one mentor, and she sort of unpicks the minutiae of any problem with me very patiently, still to this day. I was very lucky enough a few years ago, Marianne Shearer took an interest in the shop and me, and we spent some time doing some little coaching sessions, and she really got me to run my numbers. So now I know that if I have a question about whether I should buy a new piece of equipment or plan something for the business, that I just need to sit down and do a spreadsheet straight away, and that should give me all the answers that I need. And I hadn't really had that sort of pointed out so well before, that that was really a tool I needed to have in my toolbox. Yep. And then we have a really great customer, Ross, who is a venture capitalist, I think, but he's this like really incredible businessman, and he took an interest in the shop, and he does these like really lovely coaching. If I walk him to his car with his box of cakes or something, I'll ask him a question and it'll give me like a really like, a, you know, a little bit of a story or something, or like an aphorism that I can like latch onto. And for all of them, I think the greatest thing in finding these mentors is that they are very complimentary of the things that I do, but I know it comes from a very real place, but they're also tell me the stuff I need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very balanced, you know, I don't have someone just barking at me saying, you should have done this, you should have done that. They're very like, you've done that well, but go and do this and really drill down into those numbers to see what that means. And I think that's been really nice, but they've sort of been in and out. They're not people that I see all the time. And that's kind of nice. And then for the rest of it, it's just a, like a bowerbird approach where I just sort of pick information. So I'll listen to like your podcast. I'll listen to someone on there that is in a similar business that I think I need, you know, in the darker moments, I need to have a bit of clarity or light. I love Brené Brown, The Dare to Lead. They're really great podcasts, really inspirational.
Yes.
And I subscribe to Seth Godin, his emails. I get like two or three emails like with him a day.
Yeah. How good is he?
Yeah. So good. And my favorite of his is the turning that thing on its head about how you have to find something that you're passionate about and then you'll work. Like that's a condition.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about this thing about like getting a foot in the door with something and then you work hard on it with focus. And once you make progress, you start to become passionate about it. But you start with, you always start with the work first and then you find the passion inside it. And I really love that.
Mm. And just his smart, like I get his blog emails every day. Even if they're totally random, I'm like, oh, I haven't thought about it that way.
Yeah. I really just love finding that information in places around the world through podcasts or just like books and just putting them together in a way that makes sense for me and my business.
Amazing. Are you pretty kind of like, do you have a big sort of, I don't know, software system out the back or like how do you kind of work with your platforms and tools? Because you have got, you know, you're running a busy business all day long. Are you on the computer much?
Not a lot. We're on phones a lot. So, and especially during COVID, during 2020, we went to all phones. So instead of getting an online ordering app, we did it all in-house.
Oh,
so
wow.
We're like, yeah, so we're super low tech. So we got three extra phones, mobile phones, and people could text their orders to us. And one of the staff taught us how to do, so Emma Osborne, she was like, we can do keyboard shortcuts. So we had all these keyboard shortcuts set up. So people would order and would say, great, got your order. This is what time you have to pick it up by, which we just do by pressing like two letters on the keyboard. But that's about all we have in terms of technology. We're pretty low tech and probably the most high tech thing we have is a bread prover that can prove bread for like 3 days and have it ready for, you know, for baking. That is probably, yeah, our most high tech thing. But other than that, it's just, yeah, phones and the whole suite of Apple. And for us, I love Xero. I loved it since the day I first got it. And I find it really fun using Xero.
Mm-hmm.
And then just having those things like Lightspeed and Deputy that integrate straight into it have been, because they weren't available to me when I first started. So having them come into the picture have been really, really helpful.
Amazing.
Yeah, so much fun. I used to love making sure all those accounts were like reconciled to the Xero. I used to feel so proud of myself.
And then how it comes up and says, congratulations. You have
I've done it.
Or where you'd like open it and sometimes you're like, oh my God, there's only four pages. It's not like 20.
Yeah.
And you're like going through, or even when it automates, I still like look at it and be like, yes, go Xero. It already knows what that thing is. Yeah. Versus me looking at me like, what did I spend $27 on in Fitzroy?
Yeah. And I love it when my accountant says you that we keep one of the most organized systems ever. And I'm like, yeah, gold star for me.
And I love that because you'd said at the start how you thought you weren't the greatest at numbers or you didn't know numbers. I feel like that's amazing. And also I should have said earlier, when you pointed those things out or even when you'd said, oh, I didn't think I was the great, you know, going to be the greatest around people and then you did the admin job, I do feel like often, you know, I hear it all the time from business owners. Oh, I'm not creative. I'm not this, I'm not that.
And yep.
Then unpacking, they're like, oh yeah, I have actually done that or I've done that really well or, you know, I've kept my staff for the last 5 years because I've got a really great culture. Like,
yeah, yeah.
pat ourselves on the back enough for the stuff we do.
Exactly. Yeah. And a funny little story is that in the second year, I think it was for about $6, but I sent a correction to the ATO because I'd underpaid on my BAS. And I sent them a correction of $6 because I wanted to make sure that everything was
totally
well reconciled. Yep.
Yes.
And I was very proud of that moment.
Oh, no, it's like taking care of, I feel like it's that song, taking care of.
Yeah, yeah.
But totally. It really is. So what do you think you are most proud of from the whole journey that you've had over the last 10 years and obviously before that with the other two businesses?
I think it's just doing it year after year when it's been hard, like finding anchors and lights or, you know, changing my way out of situations that haven't been great. So I'm really proud of that, that tenacity just to keep going. I'm proud that we stopped using takeaway cups. We still have a way to go with the cake boxes, but we've still, you know, managed to say that not having so much disposable, you know, is good for, makes me feel proud of the business that we are. COVID survival was a pretty huge thing that I was very proud of, and the way that the team just really adapted every day and how almost energized we were by how we make it good for our customers and stay in business and make it safe was incredible. I'm so proud of the work culture we have at Beatrix, that it's kind and it's empowering and it is a really nice place to work. And, you know, I just knew I wanted it to be that way, but I think that sometimes when you just set the goal, you just start moving towards that goal and it happens.
Mm.
And I think the thing I'm most proud of is that the business that Beatrix is just like engaged every part of me and unearthed skills unknown to me. It's brought me oven loads of joy. And I just feel so pleased that I opened those doors 10 years ago. So glad I took the chance.
Oh, I love that answer. Oh, that's just perfect, because I do feel like part of the reason I started my business was to help people start a business, because life is like mostly, you know, work and sleep and a little bit of playtime.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you want to enjoy what you're actually doing, maybe not 24/7, but for the bulk of it, you want to enjoy it and love it. So I absolutely love that answer. Another question I wanted to ask you before we wrap up is there anything you would have done differently? So if someone's listening to this and potentially opening a similar shop or a shop that sells things directly to customers, maybe not food, but is there anything else you would do differently if you were starting out now?
Okay, so this is a great question, and I know that I could sit here and list like a million things I wish I had have done or I hadn't have done,
mm-hmm.
but when I tried to do that, all I realized was that every time I wish I hadn't have done something that was technically a failure for the business, it actually ended up giving me so much knowledge from those failures. The only thing I would say that I wish I'd done differently was to have a more dynamic accountant at the start, like opening up. So someone that you can really have simpatico with,
mm-hmm.
and that can guide you at the start. But everything that's been bad has actually been something for the good. And I honestly like feel that, like there's just nothing like if I've hired the wrong person, I've learned the next time how to hire not the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have made an error with how we've dealt with a customer, then we've learned to put that into practice, that we don't do that with customers, or we change how we change our language or our script with customers. So I really wouldn't change a thing.
Oh, love that one too.
Really, really, really wouldn't. Yep.
Yeah. I often say to people, have you got a good accountant? Because I feel the same. Like if you have a good accountant, that is just like a huge pillar in your, you know, army of tools that will really guide you on your money and things that you're potentially not aware of.
Yes. Yeah. And I know that I didn't have great bookkeepers at the start, and I was going to put that on that list. But then I was like, but having not a great bookkeeper meant that I had to learn everything, and it meant that I got really good at everything, which helps you to run your numbers and understand them. So
hopefully.
When I did get a good bookkeeper, I could I could see what she was doing and the value that she was bringing to the business. And I wouldn't have had that if I had, someone from the start.
Yeah, I completely agree. I had a horrendous experience with a bookkeeper where they misreconciled like 2,000 or more records in the wrong places. And it was just,
oh my God.
Yeah, they didn't know what my business did. And yeah, just a whole lot of things. But I agree. It made me really be like, okay, let's get super clear on this myself. And I think that's a really good lesson for anyone listening. I often talk to people about, like, you know, the basics of SEO or the basics of this or web design or user experience, because I'll be like, if you go and choose an agency, that's great, but at least get the basics so you know what they're talking about. And if they're going to charge you $25,000, you have some idea of where that money is going and why they're doing what they're doing.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. And so lastly, I guess, where can people connect with you and what's sort of next for you? And is it wrong for people to come in and say hello to you there? Is it better to contact you on email or phone you?
I was so devastated by a Google review that we got during the second lockdown when we had pre-order only. This woman was so mad at me because I was on the front counter, but it was so stressful that day. Mm. And she did come by to sort of have a connection and to say hello and how much he loved the book. But that day I was so overwhelmed that I wasn't being my best self. But I always encourage people, but that's very rare that that happens, but I always encourage people to pop by the shop because it is a bit easier now that we're like not in lockdown and that we're like open again. We've got staff on, so I'm a bit more free to say hello and sign a book. You can DM. Really loved answering people's baking queries on the DM on Instagram during the last year since the book's been out, and just pop by and say hi.
Oh, I love that. That's really, and it's really lovely to have like face-to-face connections as well.
It is. It's so nice and it just means a lot. A lovely woman came by for her birthday yesterday and I got my photo taken with her and she was just so happy and it made me feel really good. And it's just really nice to have such like really lovely, wonderful customers because that's what really got us through last year and they really are the lifeblood of this business as well.
Oh, so good. Well, we will make sure that we link to your address and not your personal one, obviously. Unless people want to see you eating caramel cake.
through the blinds.
They'll be like snuffing it. Oh, I got it. They'll find you at BeatrixBakes.com and BeatrixBakes on Instagram, and we'll put all the details in the show notes. But thank you so, so much for coming on and sharing your business journey and so many tips and insights that people can walk away with.
Thank you. That's been so lovely to talk about it because I think that talking about it kind of crystallizes as well. I'm not really one to dissect why I do things, but this has been really beautiful to do that as part of the chat. Yes.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to getting in there at some point and seeing you, meeting you face to face.
Gorgeous.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Oh, what an amazing woman and just such a source of so much inspiration and insight and tactical ideas and tips, things I know that people will be listening to this thinking, oh my gosh, that is what I'm going to implement. I absolutely love chatting to Nat. I love what she's built with her business. I love that she's so focused on the experience and also, you know, making it a great experience for her customers, but also a great experience for the people who work there and for herself as the business owner as well. So I would love to hear what you thought about this, what you've taken away from it. I'm sure that Nat would love to hear what you've taken away from it as well. So definitely reach out to them. You can find Beatrix Bakes at beatrixbakes.com. You can also follow them on Instagram along with another 75,000 people. It's at Beatrix Bakes. And if you are based in Melbourne, you might want to get along and go and check out the cakes and the pastries and the goodies in person. And you can do that at 688 Queensbury Street, North Melbourne. And of course, we'll link to all of that in the show notes. So two things really stood out for me. I mean, there were so many pieces of gold in that interview, but two pieces really stood out to me. The first was the concept of this no fence, of this fence where that is your boundaries. Anything outside of that
you are welcome to say no, and maybe you should say no. And then anything inside of that is what you can say yes to. I absolutely love that. I talk to so many small business owners who feel uncomfortable with setting boundaries. And I have been there for sure. And I think, you know, certain things will still come up that you feel awkward in around boundaries. But in the first few years of my business, for sure, I did not set boundaries with clients, and I would get back to them at all hours, even on weekends. I would, you know, forego my stuff to be there for the clients. And definitely I still, you know, try and give a good experience with people, but I'm also building a business that is working for me and has to work for the lifestyle that I want as well. So I absolutely loved the idea and the concept of a no fence, of kind of ringing a fence around what you will and won't accept. The second thing that I absolutely loved was the idea of the random extraordinary moments. I just think that is such a fantastic philosophy to run your business by and to really connect with your audience and build a community, because it's so much more than I'm just doing a basic transaction. It's okay, what else could make this a great day for that person? Absolutely loved it. And I think obviously it goes to show that things like that have helped Nat build such an incredible business, really, really strong community around that business. And, you know, it's been there for 10 years. It's going to be there for another 10, 20, who knows, however long she wants to keep running that for. So absolutely loved it. If you would like to read the full transcript of the interview or any links, you can find that over at mydailybusinesscoach.com/podcast/84. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, go ahead and give it some love. Please leave a review or hit the 5 stars. And of course, share it with a business friend so that they can learn as well. Thanks so much. See you next time. Bye. Thanks for listening to the My Daily Business Coach podcast. If you want to get in touch, you can do that at mydailybusinesscoach.com or hit me up on Instagram at mydailybusinesscoach.